session number 25180, reel 3.
I'm trying to refresh my memory on.
This is the second reel of a taped interview with Lachlan McTaggart in his home in Perth, Western Australia, on the 19th of the 6th, 2003, for the Imperial War Museum in London, and the interviewer is John Bannister. I wanted to discuss with you, obviously arriving in England, what the feeling at the time was on your arrival, the general situation, the feeling in the air in relation to the way the war was going. Germany had been recently bombing London. What was the sense that you got on your arrival to England?
I felt, with our initial training, at their operational training, the unit, the whole realisation of what Bomber Command was and our job ahead of us was one of unknown excitement, really, as we were having done our operational training unit. We're getting the sense of perhaps nervousness and also reality. It was all coming very home to us. It made us very well, we're here now, and we've got to see it all through. And in that, and in the realities of that, were brought home to us in operational training. Our crews, we all had to know each other intimately. We were all wondering the same thing. Never had we been faced in our life with such charge as this one. And the there were accidents and other crews all milled together, and it was all very well, the confusion of thoughts and my own thinking as to, but we were there to do there was no backward thinking. We had to take our part, yes.
In relation to the general sense of optimism in relation to the war, how would you have rated that at this time?
I felt there was a driving force of to stand firm with our friends in what we were committed to. We were committed, and the reality of it was all very sobering. And then accidents did occur within the training too, where the fellows were dropping out or ill but had their accidents occurring. Not all, though quite some casualties were recorded in those days of training. And then the risk factor was being very realistic as to, were we lucky enough to get through? It was I think there was to say we weren't in fearing of the test of how we would stand up to it was all there in front of us, and we only prayed that we could keep our minds and ourselves together and do what we were obviously had to ask ourselves that we had to do.
How would you rate morale?
I think one of morale was, oh, there was a, I'm stuck for words a little bit because we were all fearing what was there, but we were, there was no such thing as not taking our place and stand by our friends. And our friends meant a lot to us.
You wouldn't let your fears show.
No. We We were all putting to the test of our personal fears to it. But personally, there was a current of fear. There were too many examples around us where the fellows weren't coming back. And I think that was a test to us all. But we stood by we're all in it together feeling. I think that's what helped enormously.
In relation to the situation, in relation to your experience of flying, can we talk now about the training and what that would include in England?
Well, my training was at that stage and going into I was trained as a gunner, wireless operator gunner, much to my, as I said, terrible disappointment, and I found it. Well, you had to put your faith in you're all part of an aeroplane. And I think that was the most salient point I've come away with now, 50 years later, that you put your faith in the pilots, the navigators, everybody, the gunners, we all stood by each other. And I think that was a very commanding, very, very...
People talk of the sort of bond created within the air crew.
It was that bond, yes. A very strong bond that I think it all kept us going, yeah. Unfortunately, later on, of course, we got shot down. But at that stage, we were all put our faith in each other, and then that was enormous assistance to our morale.
What planes had you flown up until this point?
Oh, in training, I was. I flew and we started in Tiger Moss, of course, but this was, I had two sections. One I was trained in, going into to England, I was a gunner and Wallace operator. And of course then we did ferry battles in gunnery exercises and we just went in the flying field. It was only after I'd done my operations and finished, I would then remustered to piloting. So my Air Force career was put in two, really. But it was the earlier part, but that was the retesting one.
When did you start to learn to work in England?
Oh, we were put in... we went straight into... as gunners, we were put straight into Wellingtons.
Tell us what it was like to suddenly be put into a Wellington. Describe a Wellington bomber to us.
Well, they were a great old geodetic aeroplane, and in themselves they were all very slow, of course, of the day. But we had our faith in our aeroplanes. There was no question of that, and prayed to God they kept going. I was in a gun turret, and I was in front gunning at that stage, and you had a third's eye view of everything around you, and of course it was a bit. Unfortunately, you can't move in an aeroplane. You've just got to. You can't move. You're done.
What did the initial training in that Wellington include?
Oh, we were on mostly gunnery and radio operating.
What did that entail, though? How?
Well, the course is built up from the day, from the initial training, of course, and that was done in an ITS at Summers, introduction into the service. And then, of course, we were given radio schools, and gunnery schools, and immediately we were sent to England almost straight away. And then arriving in England, we were sent straight to operational training units, where we were crewed. And there was a rather, I always remember the day, we all put in a hangar, and always had to sort ourselves out, our selections. And we made up all the, there was X amount of pilots, gunners, we all got together, and there wasn't very, initially we all met our co-airmen, put it that way. That was quite an event, really. And then we knew those fellows further and further very well. And it was a exercise in itself, really.
Getting to know sort of your human condition.
And they are our friends, yes.
In relation to your training in England, how long did you have it? How long did it take? How long did you spend in Wellington before you were sent off?
Oh, it wasn't long. My operational training unit at Moreton was, from memory, I haven't got a logbook in front of me, but it was quite considerable time. It was a month or so before we were getting together and learning to fly together, yes.
People talk of the many accidents that often happen in training. The loss of pilots, the great loss of pilots.
There were a lot, yes.
The great loss of airmen in many respects. Mm. Did you experience that?
Not really to a very great extent. It won't happen to us sinking, you know. There were accidents and crashings and so on. There were fellows killed there, but we were... you had the feeling, well, our own morale was boosted. Well, it won't happen to us. We're a better crew than that, you know, and all these sort of things that you live with boost yourselves up a little bit. I'm quite sure of that. You've got to have a confidence in. If you didn't have confidence in your own personnel and the fellows you're with. Well, you had to have it. There's no question of that. You didn't question the morale of your fellow crew. You know, we went a lot of trouble to make sure we were stood behind each other in any form of in the training and in the flying.
In relation to the flying, obviously you were being trained to go away on missions, bomber raids, those sorts of things.
Oh, yes, well, you're...
What sorts of things were you hearing about the situation in relation to the lack of, well, the loss of life involved with being an airman? How was that affecting you in the morale?
Our intelligence people, when there's thousands of men all together, our instructors and all the rest of it, we were all keen to be perfect ourselves as best we could. And it wasn't a case of being... scared or frightened, but we found that how do you think when you're frightened was a great thing. That we thought, well, I hope we're gifted to do that under pressure. And that, I think that's the sort of facts that we all steeled ourselves to cope with. And I think that was very important to all of you, that you did do that. Mm. Some fellows... It couldn't make it, of course. They didn't get there. They broke down under that system.
How were they seen by the rest? Hmm? How were they seen by the rest of the men?
Well, the ones that I was closest to that did break down that way, I feel very sorry for them. There's no fault of theirs. They just... And there was a case of one, an only boy of 18... Shouldn't have been there. He just couldn't take it. And I was, fortunately, I was a little older. I was in my 20s. And I felt sorry for him. That it wasn't his fault.
What briefings were you getting then on when you were to be sent off, what your operations would entail?
Oh, the intelligence. Oh, that was very well handled in our operational training. It was very, very structured.
How was it handled?
I think the RAF, which we were our host, we were only a scattered Australian fellows with the RAF boys, and I think the RAF instructors were very practical, and we were anxious to equip ourselves for our own safety, or as best we could, and they were, well, there was lots of, we had a very excellent instructors in operational unit instructors, because a lot of them had been doing operations themselves and were first hand to help us.
What sort of advice were they giving you in relation to what operations entail?
I think they were very, very apt in trying to equip us as best they possibly could to get us efficient, know our job, know what our duties were, and perfect them. And we were, and time was not on their side. They were, we had to be remembering that the British were all, we weren't long service enlisted men, of course.
What were they telling you about the Luftwaffe?
We got to be better than, outsmart them. we were trained to identify our enemy fighters. We had trained in flak evasions. We were, that was all done at our operational training unit, and had done by fellows that had been actually in the air, and they were screening. They had, our screens were screened. The pilots had a pilot to screen them. The navigators, the gunners, everybody had a screen. They were actually boys that have, or chaps that have been over, and they've done operations, and they were, and they came back. So that we were, had the most, best insight that you could, we felt that we were getting the best insight that you could ever, to prepare us for what was about to happen.
So when it was time to contemplate heading off, did you really feel prepared?
I think I'd have to say that there was a lot of anxiety, as to we didn't know what we were really going to meet.
All right, well, let's talk about then the situation in relation to your first experience of combat flying, where you'd be sent on a mission and you were going to go into it.
Well, the first ones that I so remember, we were night bombers, and then in England at the time, you had to cross over the French, the coastal batteries of France, which were anti-aircraft in the main, batteries on the French coast.
What was that like?
Terrifying. But you could see the flak shells in front of you, and you just had to try and weave your way through it. And they were, that was a very hair-raising, you know, very, very terrifying thing. I'm quite sure I'll never in my life go duck shooting again. I feel what the ducks would feel, but there's nothing you can do about it.
In relation to, obviously, your front gunner, so you're at the very front of the plane.
I was out there looking at it, yeah.
Describe the scene. What do you see?
Well, you see the flak shells in front bursting, you know. What was more realistic was the anti-aircraft guns had tracer bullets, and you could follow the firing coming up, so you had to weave, the airplane would weave. to avoid, and you kept turning. So as soon as you got through the belt of flex, then there'd be everything would go quiet. The cordite, the bombs, it's like an empty shell, really, with the air's disturbed by the flak shells. And so that when you got through those, there was the fighter belt. So you kept the planes, you never stayed, because the way that we were always taught that the German fighters, the night fighters, they'd come up underneath you. So you don't actually, a lot of planes would get shot down that the chaps never saw it hit them. So this was very, very, very stressing. And you didn't know which one would hit you next. So the whole thing we found was a few hours of this was very, very demanding on you. I feel if we're speaking, as I am speaking personally, there'd be a cold sweat, so to speak, it doesn't matter as to your get through these for 4 or 5 hours over to the targets in Germany or back was all very demanding. And I felt on your nerves and then your whole, you were very exhausted to be able to work, think, and under those conditions. And if I may say so, you need a lot of luck.
In relation to that stressful situation, what was it like when you were faced with having to do a job, for instance, night fighter coming up 10 o'clock, whatever it might be? When was your first experience of actually firing your machine gun?
I didn't actually, from the front gunner position, I didn't actually fire that till I went out to 40 Squadron in Egypt.
Okay.
In the Ruhr, I didn't fire from the front gun. We were attacked from the back, the rear gunners, but I never got a chance.
In relation to the coordination with the crew, in relation, I presume that there's radio silence for a lot of that time and silence within the crew for a lot of that time.
A code was quickly in training made that it's all intercom. Everyone is hearing each other, no one, you only speak when there's no idle chatter in these things. We're very trained to do what you're told and or cooperate or report. If I saw anything, you'd report what you do and what, you know, the enemy target. And it's, I think training is a very, all comes to the fore in the discipline.
In relation to your initial operations, you mentioned flying over the Ruhr and bombing. What was that like to actually get over your operational zone and to drop bombs? What was that like? Describe the sounds, describe the sights, if you can. The thoughts.
It appeared you're never the first there anyway, because in my day the pathfinders would light the target, such as the marshalling yards of Cologne or wherever it might be, and we'd see them. They'd be burning within either incendiaries, or half our bombers were incendiaries and half high explosives, so that it was well lit ahead. So there was all coming into you to drop your bit. So you dropped them and you got the hell out of it as quick as you could, and there was a certain amount of relief of getting getting that bomb load off to all the crew. And then you could start wondering where you got there with an achievement, and then you wound your way back and ran the gauntlet home again. And that was a sort of, that was in, you must remember, this was all in the middle of the night, and all we saw was actual burning and explosive smoke, and the targets lit, and then we'd be run the gauntlet home, because that, as soon as you dropped and came back, you're into your fighter troubles again. So it was an enormous relief to get back over the English Channel. And you needed, as I say, a lot of luck to get there.
How long would the operation take? Right?
Well, we were taking in the Ruhr down as far as Cologne and back with the Wellington. We were 5-6 hours, 5 hours, well, in all, getting down there and back. And that was a...
How much of that time would you be going through the danger zone, as it were?
As soon as you crossed the English Channel, you'd be in the fighter-enemy relationship there. And
so three-quarters of the time, basically.
Yeah, three-quarters of that. It was a great relief to get back.
On the return, what was the success rate? How many crews would get back?
Well, the English bombing, I'm switching my thinking a little bit from, we weren't long in England, we only did a few operations, and then we were sent to Egypt, and then we were bombing various bombing areas there, and there was a great relief for us, me actually personally, to get into Egypt, into the climate position. But we lost lost a lot of aeroplanes.
In Europe, how many operations would you have done?
I only did 5 operations there, and then we were sent to Egypt.
In relation to the returning chaps, were there many lost over Europe during that time?
Oh, yes. The early part, in the 1941-42 area, it was only in about halfway through June that it was a question of aeroplanes. And as I say, we were in the first 1,000 bomber raids, and the supremacy. Before that, the Germans had some air supremacy, and when they were raiding England. And of course, this made a difference. But we lost, where we had our trouble and where we were lost, it was in 40 Squadron in Egypt.
Okay. In relation to the 1,000 bomber raids, you're talking, bombing Cologne and places like that, what was the thought when, obviously you could see the fire of the city, you could see the fire of the target area, what was the thought in relation to what was going on down there?
Well, I think we were so concerned with to get the bombs away, and in that atmosphere we were so involved with our doing the job and getting home, and there weren't many thoughts for what was going down under there, and we were given instructions to, most of the time, those marshalling yards, a lot of Cologne was burning outside those yards, so it was an enormous sickle. We read more about it in the paper than we knew that was on there.